Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Destiny Dawn Harris. Destiny is a wife and mother to three grown children and lives in Mobile, Alabama. She graduated from the University of South Alabama with a Bachelor's of Science in Business Administration and owns and runs an automotive detailing business with her husband, Brent, that they founded in 1999. From 8,000 Miles is her first book. In it, she details the traumatic events that unfolded in their family's life in mid-September 2018. It is one of the many trials she and her husband have faced, and she writes about it in a very honest and candid way to bring strength, healing, and hope to others who have faced their own set of trials and circumstances. Her faith in Jesus Christ is the reason she has made it through, and she sees everything she writes as a testimony of what she has become and what God has done for her. Destiny loves to read, spends time writing, researching, cooking, and baking bread. She also enjoys skiing on both the lakes and slopes with her family in summer and winter, with her little Maltese, Molly, in tow. Her favorite topics to write on are health, spirituality, and business. Her dream is to one day open a health retreat in the rural area near her home with a focus on helping families that have children with mental health issues so they can have a better quality of life and find respite from the challenges of daily life. Destiny, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, and I found your story, I think you're pure serendipity. I think I had seen you that you were a guest on another podcast. I was drawn to it, and I said, I need to reach out to her because your story and what you and your family have gone through and how you've transcended it to this point is going to be of immeasurable value to my listeners who are also looking for ways to transcend their own life challenges.
Right. Well, I'm very happy to share.
Well, we might as well get right down to it. So my first question is, tell our listeners about the experiences, and particularly the experience that you allude to in your book, that have shaped your current life path and your life passions today.
Okay. Well, in 2018, our daughter was still living at home at the time. She was 21 years old and she had never lived away from home before. And she left her home in the middle of the night and got on a plane headed to India to see someone she had been talking to online for 2 years without our knowledge. And his father had sent her a one-way ticket to come to his country. And the whole time she had a boyfriend here at home. So for those whole 2 years, so we had no idea that she was talking to anyone else. So with the help of Homeland Security and U.S. Marshals and the Indian government and divine intervention, we were able to go over there and bring her back. But she was angry at us for bringing her back. And she said, I didn't want them to save me. So we have been 7 years almost. It'll be 7 years in September without even a single text from her. And so it's been very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, as I was thinking of your situation, Destiny, I was thinking it's like you're also grieving the loss of somebody who's still alive.
Exactly. Yeah, they call it complicated grief.
Yeah, and you look at the circumstances in terms of which befell your family, that had to be really complicated. And I can imagine it was very difficult to even determine the signs that her head was leaning in towards India.
Right. Yeah. We had no idea. It was very hard to pull anything out of her, get anything out of her head. So she stayed alone in her room a lot, and we just never really knew what was on her mind. But the way she stayed at home, I never thought she would ever. I mean, she hardly went anywhere. So to go across the world, she hardly ventured out at all. This was just totally unexpected. I never could have dreamed that she would have done this.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at a parent's worst nightmare. I know for me, losing a child was a nightmare that I never even intended to envision until it happened to me. And I can't imagine in your book of parenting, you were thinking my child being victim to an online predator and taking her away from her family. I doubt that was even in the parenting manual for you.
Right. Yeah, wasn't even on the horizon. I didn't even know this could happen. I didn't even know it was a thing or it was possible.
Yeah, and I'm sure your awareness in terms of about the dangers of human trafficking and the prevalence of human trafficking have probably increased, you know, they've magnified in intensity since this has happened to you and your family and your daughter.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, one of the things on your website, and I'm paraphrasing this, you mentioned that you didn't know whether the intention of the online stranger was an attempted human trafficking or obtaining U.S. citizenship. Has that intention become any clearer to you and Brett and your two boys?
It really hasn't. I don't know if we'll ever truly know the intentions that were in his mind that day when he met her in the airport, unless someone comes forward who did know or he comes forward. But since, you know, at the end of the story, I do tell about how he did get into this country in January 2024, we've heard, and that when he got here, he went straight to Chicago. He never saw her. At this time, they had gotten married. She had went back 7 months after we brought her home and married him. She went back to India and married him in 2019 in June. And so she started working to get him to this country. She worked some nights. She worked two jobs at a time. She worked really hard to get him here for about five or six years. And then when he got here, he just went straight to Chicago and never even saw her. So, but to me, you know, that would make it look like it's U.S. citizenship. But the fact that she had a 10-year tourist visa, is what makes me think in my mind that this was never about him getting married to come to the U.S., because why would she need to live in India for so long? I believe that he was going to make a transaction with someone and that someone needed her in India for a long time to possibly to work her. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, and I think if that were me, you know, with the way the circumstances and the facts played out, I would probably come to that same conclusion as well. You know, another question that just occurred to me, and I'm kind of going off of the questions that I sent you earlier. I know probably as part of the investigation with Homeland Security, local police, FBI, whoever was involved, I'm sure they took a look at some of her computer, her text messages back and forth to the stranger. Was there anything that you could cull or deduce from those text messages that told you what the attraction was to this particular individual that may help somebody else who's in the same boat?
Right. Well, before she left, we didn't have any information like that. All we had was the letter she left because she had her phone and her laptop with her. So there was no way to get any conversation. But after we had brought her back, I had an app on my phone from back when they were in high school where I kept up with text conversations and any, you know, activity on the internet. And I had forgotten about it. But when I went back and looked at it, I was able to pull up all the text messages and communication between them. But there really wasn't a whole lot in at that point because it was just while we were in India. It wasn't leading up. It wasn't the 2 years leading up. So the 2 years leading up, I didn't have any kind of information like that to look at. But there are some warning signs looking back on the whole situation that I saw. And I go and do speaking engagements and share that information. I'd be happy to share it with you if you want me to.
Absolutely, because one of the questions I wanted to ask here, what are the signs that a child may be victim of an online predator? So why don't you get into that in terms of based on your own experiences and what you've since learned, and let's go there.
Okay. Well, a lot of things did come from her letter that I did find that was interesting that told me some tactics that he used. But the main number one thing that they must do, the number one warning sign and what they must do to a perpetrator to take your child from you is they must isolate them. They must isolate them from their friends and family. And they will do this in a way where they make your loved one feel like they're either afraid of you or that they're angry at you. And it won't make logical sense. This is one of the ways that they bring division. And so my daughter stayed in her room all the time, and she spent a lot of time talking to him on the computer that I didn't know. And she was already alone anyway. She kind of lived most of her life more in isolation. So she was already had kind of done that part for him. And I did notice that she started getting very angry towards us, saying we didn't feed her. She was 21 years old. She would just act pitiful, like, you know, she was not being fed or taken care of. And yeah, I would like some food. If I asked her if she wanted some food, she wanted me to pick up something. And so it was just kind of odd. The second thing after isolation is any change in characteristic or behavior. And there was a couple of things that really was strange to me, but I had no idea at this time where it was coming from. So I could only look back and see it. But at the time, it really frightened me. And one thing she was asking about, you know, airports and flying and if our airport was an international airport. And I thought she was just interested in flying. So I had no idea why she was asking that. But then another time she came into my room at night, which she hardly ever did. So for her to stand by my bed at night while I'm getting in bed was in itself was like, okay, she actually wants to have a conversation and talk about something. And the question that she asked me just gripped me with an unfamiliar fear. She said, is there anything I could ever do that would make you not want to let me live here anymore? And that just scared me to death. And I didn't know what to do with that information. And I said, no, nothing. Why? And she said, no reason. And I was just thinking, well, what are you planning? But then I just started to rationalize it in my mind. I started thinking, what's she going to do? She's not going to do anything. I mean, I could have never dreamed what she was about to do. So instead of having a conversation, I started to just rationalize it away. And I didn't have that conversation and really get down to the bottom of what all that question meant. Even if I had to wait a night or two to get my bearings, I should have still had that conversation so I could figure out what to do. That was part of what, you know, that meant she was planning something. That meant that she was going to do something. And other warning signs, you know, I had looked at my daughter's bank account. Some people may not have access to that, but as long as they're in your home and you're trying to help them with their finances, if you're able to see that and you look at that together like we did, there were questions there. The mail, you have to look at where they're getting their mail. I mean, she was very upset that she couldn't have a key to her own mailbox. So that was interesting. And sometimes they can even have a P.O. box you don't know about. So you don't know if they're not buying it themselves, someone else could be buying it for them. And that's how he sent her the plane tickets was through the mail. So, and then on her bank statement, there was where, you know, she had purchased her Visa, but I didn't know what that was. I thought it was a clothing store. So you have to dig a little deeper than just looking at what the name of the charge is. You know, you just Google it. I would have found, and I found it after she was gone, but it was too late then. So just really, you know, things like that. We're so busy these days. I say we sacrifice our children on the altar of busyness. And, you know, once they're grown and they're over 18, they're 21, you just don't feel like you need to as much. But you still, you know, as long as they're not out on their own and they still need guidance, you just need to be there to watch things and listen and, you know, pay attention.
And, you know, when you mentioned the part about whether the online predator will isolate the individual and turn them against their family and their friends. That's a typical play out of the playbook of an abuser.
Yes.
And somebody who's extremely controlling. And the other thing, you know, as she was asking that question, is there anything that I could ever do where you wouldn't allow me to live here? You know, without any further information, I think I would have taken it as saying, do you unconditionally love me? Is there something that I could... Yeah. What is the worst possible thing I could do to stop you from loving me? And sometimes I think no matter how old or young that child is or our child is, Destiny, they have to ask us that question. Do you still love me? Is there anything I could ever do that would shatter that? So, I mean, had you had a crystal ball and had you had this information before, you and any other parent would have been able to become hypervigilant and say, hey, something's up. Let me check the computer. Let me take a look at what's going on. Let me take a look at more of her bank activity. But without that information, you interpreted it the way you interpreted it and based on what you already knew and what you saw with your daughter. So,
yeah. Yeah, I wish that I would have said, well, what's the worst thing you think of? But she probably wouldn't have told me. But yeah, I wish that I would have just, you know, had more of a conversation about it. It was just so scary. And when you're scared, you're paralyzed and you don't know what to do. You can't even think, you know, so.
Well, the other thing, like you said, she was 21 at the time. She was an adult. And, his parents were thinking, okay, we've done our job. They're 18 years old now. They're at the legal age of adulthood. We've given them enough information and enough guidance and enough tools where we are confident that they can make their own decisions. So it's a natural impulse to just kind of back off and allow them to find their own autonomy in the world. So, who would have thought that all of this was leading up to the fact that she was going to be traveling to India with somebody you didn't know, somebody you never knew existed, and all of a sudden your life has turned upside down.
Yes. Yep, scary.
Yeah. And bringing her back to the United States should have been a joyful reunion, but obviously it was anything but.
No, it wasn't. We were so happy that we were bringing her back, but the minute that we landed in our Mobile airport, she was again taken from us, but this time by people we knew and trusted and people who were helping us in the beginning to get her back. And it was my husband's brother, my brother, and a friend of ours from church. And those three conspired together. The way that they got her to go with them is my friend told her, whispered in her ear, took her to the side and said, you know, that your mom's going to put you in a mental institution. You'll never see the light of day again. And I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know what she said to her. But unbeknownst to me, the whole time that I was in India, this person was texting with my daughter, completely turning her against me, telling her all these things. It was just unbelievable, the things that she was saying to her. So I wasn't really fighting against my daughter like I thought. I wasn't really fighting against the guy as much as I was actually fighting against this other person who was putting all these thoughts in her head. And I guess she was, I don't know, working with, she was helping the other person. And we don't know why people do things that they do. It was just really an odd, strange turn of events. And I just think it was a spiritual attack, a spiritual warfare. People have their own insecurities and things that they do for reasons. And I have no idea, you know, what was going on with that, but she definitely did a number on our relationship, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, someone can take your child from you and turn them against you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Just like infidelity, when you have a spouse, you know, that someone takes from you. I mean, there's no legal course of action, especially, you know, not once they're over 18. So it's been very sad. I think if that hadn't happened, it would have turned out very differently, but I just have to realize that, there's a reason it all works out in the end, and I'm still hopeful that things are going to turn around. So,
yeah, I think I read somewhere that, you know, if it's not okay, it's not over. So
that's good. I like
that. I took comfort in that in many, many stages of my life, and particularly with my own worst tragedy, I took that to heart. But so, yeah, I'll just say if it's not okay, it ain't over.
That's right. It's not over.
So, and I'm hoping that there'll be another chapter that you could write to the story that has a happier ending and a new beginning.
Yes.
And I can have you back on the podcast so we could talk about that chapter.
Absolutely. I look forward to that.
And I will hold out positive thoughts. And if you're okay with that, I'll hold out prayers that happens.
Yes. Thank you so much. Yes.
You're welcome. Now let's get to your book. From 8,000 Miles. I know this is your first book. What inspired you to write it? And what do you want readers to take away from reading it?
Well, what inspired me to write it is I just kept thinking that I have to write this. It's going to be painful. I don't want to go there. I had to live 2 years in thinking about it, like really just wallowing in it. It was very difficult, but I knew that I needed to do it to help prevent it from happening to someone else, because if I didn't think it even could possibly happen, I had no idea this even existed, then other people needed to know that it did happen. It can happen. It did happen to us and our family. And in a town where we're at, you know, we're not in some big town. This is just a smaller town. I would call it a smaller town. It's not, you know, New York or California or anything like that. And you just don't think of things like that. Really, I wouldn't have thought it happened anywhere in this country. I really wouldn't have. But, you know, that's other countries that you think about it happening to. So this was just something that was so new and so bizarre to me. And I knew people needed to hear about it and they needed to know the things that we went through, because when people hear your story, it helps them to see that someone else has been through pain and trials the way that they have. And it helps them kind of know that someone else is going through something, and to just be there and witness it and see the struggles that I made and then the victories that I had over those struggles. It brought healing for me to write it. And it also, I believe, brings healing to other people when they read it, and strengthens them and strengthens their faith and lets them know that they can get through whatever they're going through as well. And we're still not through it, but we're making good headway. So it's interesting that I'm writing it as it's not over and that I'm still in the middle of it. I, you know, could have held out and waited until it was all nice and pretty at the end, but I don't know when that'll ever happen. And I felt like I need to do this before someone else is a victim, you know. So
it makes sense. And I think we have a choice when we deal with tragedy. We can let tragedy just debilitate us, or we can choose to rise above the challenges that that tragedy brought and try to find meaning and bring hope to others and help others who are in the same boat, or to prevent others from happening to them what happened to you and your family.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, and keep doing what you're doing. And I know that it's going to be a benefit to many people. And you know, we never know who we're helping in the process. We never know the impact that our actions have on the world. But I kind of figure if our actions are pure of heart, if our actions are genuine, it's going to have that trickle down effect where it's going to positively affect people we don't even know it's affected.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
And I like that better than the alternative of throwing out bad vibes into the world. Right. So that's a better alternative for me. So
for sure. What you put into the lives of others come back to you. So whether it's good or bad.
Yep. And one of my favorite philosophers, teachers, the late Maury Schwartz, the subject of Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom, said giving is living. And
living. That's good.
Yeah. And
no, I like that.
Me too. And if we can give of ourselves, it's just, I think it inspires us and hopefully inspires those people around the receiving end. So.
Yeah, and just perpetuates.
Yep. Yeah, one positive act leads to another positive act, and it's kind of the pay it forward effect.
Yeah. Yep.
So you have a YouTube channel and as well, and you have some very, very great content. I know you recently had an episode where you had your son on as well, yeah, too, as I can recall.
Yes.
So tell our audience about how the focus of your channel aligns with your book and your commitment to raise awareness about human trafficking and the impact that it has on families.
Okay. The YouTube channel is sort of an expansion of the book, because in the book, I just told our story. I really didn't have any material at the end to show about the warning signs of predators, how to prevent it, and things like that. So on my channel, it spurred from some of the topics from the book that I discuss. And mostly those topics are human trafficking and estrangement, because that's what we're going through now. And then the grief and healing process, because that's a huge part of what we're dealing with now. And so those are the three biggest buckets that I put my topics in. So that's where you can find out about the warning signs and ways to prevent, and just helping people get through whatever grief and healing they need through some traumatic times with their children. Mostly it's geared towards mothers with children who have went through tough situations.
And I know you've talked about some of the warning signs already. And one of the things I know we didn't get to is on the other end, what can parents do from your perspective as a preventative measure to assure that what happened to you doesn't happen to them?
Right. Well, the number one thing that you can do is get inside your child's head. You have to be able to spend time talking to them. And I know that that takes time, but even if it's just a daily walk, sometimes that's better. Just go on a walk is like going on a talk. You can just go for a walk and just see how their day was. But you have to get past the superficial. That's why it's going to take about an hour. It might take 2 hours, but you've got to get past the first layer of the stuff that they are willing to share. You've got to get past that and ask the hard questions and have an uncomfortable conversation. You're just going to have lots of uncomfortable conversations with kids, especially in their teenage years and even into their young adulthood. That's the most important thing, because if there is someone else in their life that is putting thoughts and ideas in their head, you're going to get access to that side of the conversation, because they are putting thoughts in their head. And that's the reason they isolate, is they don't want anybody else's thoughts or beliefs or plans or anything in their head but theirs. Nobody else's ideas. So you need to be able to spend time with them, not just to ask them questions, mostly to listen, ask them questions, but to try to have times where you can put things into their head that are good, that's going to help them and benefit them, that will maybe go against what they're experiencing or what they might be being manipulated or controlled by. So that's the biggest thing, is getting inside your kid's head. And of course, now that we know this, we need to be able to sit down and have the conversations about the trafficking and explain how these things happen. Tell them about how it's isolation and that these are bad signs. These are warning signs. And there's also other things. I mean, even elderly women, people have to worry about their mothers because they're getting pulled into love relationships online and sending people money and being manipulated. And so it's not just young girls, it's boys. Boys are getting pulled in through video games. So it's all different tactics. Knowing what those tactics are, knowing that it's not likely someone's just going to grab you at a gas station. That's just normally not how it happens. Because if they do it that way, the police have something to work with, because she doesn't want to be in that situation. So all they have to do is get her. But whenever she wants to be there and she wants to stay there, that's the problem, because that's when it's very difficult to rescue them, because the person has romanticized them or, you know, done something to make them want to be there. That's the hard part. So once you get taken, it's very difficult to ever get out.
Yeah. And particularly in terms of, it's not only the online predator that has turned the child against the parents, but it's anybody else who's involved in that network. And once they hear the same message over and over again, they begin to believe it's true.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
And I like the taking a walk idea with young adults. They don't do well with just sitting and doing traditional talk therapy. You know, you got to kind of get them out, get them moving.
Yeah. Get your circulation going, get in the sunshine. It's really good fresh air. It really helps.
Yeah. And understand that it may take a little while to get to what they're thinking to, but as long as you're patient, you're willing to listen, and you're willing to be present, eventually it's going to come out.
Yeah. And just as I was sitting here talking about it, I started thinking that, you know, it's just like any other project. It's going to take more in the beginning to get it going, get it started. There's going to be more to sift through, because it may have been years since you've talked to your child. But once you get to that level, then it's kind of like meeting a new friend. You have so much to talk about in the beginning, and they're just like, okay, now what do we talk about? Because we kind of caught up. So once you're caught up, you know, then you just, it doesn't take as long to keep it maintained, like a lawn, you know, just maintain the relationship.
And, you know, you're absolutely right about the human trafficking network. These traffickers are well-funded. They're well-organized. They have contacts all over the country where they can exchange victims, where they can get a load in terms of what areas have been more vulnerable for trafficking. And I believe the United States is the number one country in the world that is the target of human traffickers.
Yes. And, you know, probably because we have more money, and we're meeting the demand, which is very sad, you know, that we have that kind of demand. It is a business, and they know what they're doing. And that's why I tell girls on my channel, do not be ashamed that this happened to you, that you were deceived, that you were pulled into, that you were tricked, because that's what being deceived is. You don't know you're being deceived when you're being deceived, and anybody can be deceived. People, they know what's going to get to you. And when you're young, and they say your brain's not fully matured till you're 30 years old, so you don't have all the information to make intelligent choices about your life. And it's okay to ask your parents. if you know, I still ask my mom and my dad what I should do about this or that. I had an air conditioner go out the other day and they wanted to replace everything. And so I go and ask my parents. So you still need help from other people. So I think that there's this lie out there that you need to be independent. You don't need anybody else. And that's not true. To be grown up, to be an adult.
No, I mean, and I said this has been a theme that I've repeated on other podcasts. We cannot exist in a vacuum. We need the help of others. There's a balance between wanting some time for ourselves to reflect and being in total isolation. And we can't get to our goals. We can't get to the life that we want without the help and support of others when we feel we need to ask for it.
Yeah. You know, presidents have a whole cabinet. They have advisors. They have people that help them. I mean, no matter if he's the leader of the free world, does anything alone. And it's not wise to do it.
No, it isn't, because alone we don't have all the answers or all the particular options to deal with the situation. But a community, they can provide us options that we can't objectively look at for ourselves.
Yeah, they can get a lot done.
Absolutely. My question, in terms of your family situation, how did this situation with your daughter, how did it affect your husband, your two boys, separately and together as a family? And how have y'all dealt with the aftermath of your daughter's abduction?
Well, my husband, first of all, he just wanted to, you know, we were all grieving differently. And that was tough in itself. I think that's a huge thing when it comes to grief. My husband, of course, being the man, he had to work, he had to function. Thank goodness that he didn't have the anxiety, because we wouldn't be able to function in this house, you know, because he was the one that goes out and does the job every day. So he just needed, I think, as a man, to stay focused in his life and not be pulled down into the emotional turmoil of it all. So he was just like, he didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to think about it. He wanted to move on. And I think he needed to be able to do that. I, on the other hand, as a woman, needed to be able to talk about it. I needed to do something. That was the biggest thing. I needed to do something. That was the hardest thing, is just sitting here helpless and useless and not doing anything about it. But there wasn't really anything I could do. So that was very hard, to feel like your hands are tied. Now, my mom, she would talk. You know, she was an integral part of all of this, and she was worse than I was. I was on one, my husband's on one end, and my mom was on the other, and I'm in the middle. Like, I can't talk about it every day and analyze it like that. You know, I needed a break. So it was tough, because we were pulling each other apart, and it would come in waves, and it would just crash. The grief would just crash. And I felt at one point that I'm losing them. On top of losing my daughter, I'm losing my husband and my mother. And it just felt like, I understand why marriages sometimes end in divorce when a child passes away. When I thought, how could that happen when you need each other the most? But I understand now, because you can be grieving so differently, you just don't understand. You don't understand it, and it hurts. Let me start with my youngest son, because he was very close to my daughter. They were only 15 months apart, and they grew up doing everything together. And it's hurt him really bad. I know that he hasn't shown it that much, but I can tell that it does. I know that it does hurt him. He's kind of to the point now, I guess it's been so long, that it kind of do start to, you try not to get hard, but you do kind of get, it gets old after a while, and it's like, well, I'm moving on. I still have hope, but you know. And they have talked, she did talk to her brothers, and that has helped. Finally, after I think it was 4 years before she ever texted her closest brother, the younger one, that helped. Then she cut him off again, and then they all met last July, a year ago. They all met in person, so that was very healing for them. My older son, he is very different from my daughter, and he's such a loving person. He's such a sweet, loving, huggy person. He likes to hug. And my daughter's the opposite of that. She doesn't want to be touched. She's not a sweet person. She's very moody, and she just doesn't like to be close to people. And it just irritated her and annoyed her when he would be sweet and loving to her. Just not her flavor, I guess. She just didn't. So they've never gotten along, and she's always really hurt his feelings. So for him, he's really more grieving for us, the parent, because he loves us so much. And he's really grieving seeing us hurt. And he's grieving because he loves his family, and he sees it being torn apart, and that's what hurts him the most. He's in a great big hurry to see her again, but he wants her to be different. And that's what I think this whole thing is about. I think is to help me change, to help her change, to help us grow. We needed time apart. I know we did. It's just, this is a long time. But I believe that God sees fit. He knows how long it takes. He's the great physician. He does the surgery. He's the surgeon. He knows how long and what it needs. And I'm just hoping it won't be too much longer. But so we're just waiting. We're still hopeful.
You know, and I've always learned that God in the universe has a plan that is far beyond our understanding. But yeah. Destiny, I can tell you there are times when I just look up to the sky and say, God, the universe, creator, would you make up your mind already? I'm kind of like in a hurry. I'd like to. And then I get deafening silence.
Yeah.
You know, which is as if to say, Dave, who do you think's in charge? It's not you.
Right.
You know, it's our worst tragedies, I know, sometimes help us find our greater purpose. But I could say I wish that your worst tragedy wasn't the tragedy that happened. Yeah. And there are days that I wish my worst tragedy wasn't having my daughter die and me finding my greater purpose. But, you know, we don't have any control over what befalls us in this lifetime. It's just, what do we choose to do with it?
Exactly. That's the key.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're doing some very good things to create awareness about the dangers of human trafficking, what parents, what families can do to protect themselves against it. So I just hope that your work continues to go in the trajectory that it's going. I know you're going to help a lot of people. So
thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. One of my last questions for you is that if you could leave our listeners with one thing today, one ultimate takeaway, what would that be, Destiny?
Well, I would say there's purpose in your pain, because whatever you're going through, tragedy or trial you're going through, there is growth that happens there. So it will all be worth it. We have to learn to embrace our pain, embrace suffering. Nobody likes to suffer, but there's teachings there and there's lessons there. And if we can embrace it and see, what is this pain? What is this experience trying to teach me? There is a purpose there. And like with you, you started on a totally new journey in your life and trajectory. I've started on a new trajectory. I know that my daughter will too. And it's a growing experience, and growing doesn't feel good. It's painful. And so if we just learn to see it as our friend instead of as our enemy, because the first thing we want to do is get rid of it, right? But then we're not going to learn what it's trying to teach us. And so I want to say, your story's not over. Our story isn't over. And if you just, you know, share your story, and as you do that, you'll heal and you'll bring healing to others. And you can get through whatever it is you're going through right now. You can come out on this. You can come out on the other side of this. You can come out on the other side better than when you went into it, because you're going to be a different person. You're going to have grown. You're going to come out better. You'll be better for it. It will all be worth it. But you have to embrace it. You can't fight it.
Absolutely. And the days that I tried to fight growth, and where I just wanted my life to be where it was before my daughter, and I call it transition to a new existence. I wanted my life to be the way it was before she transitioned, but I realized after asking a couple hundred times for that, it wasn't going to happen. So I had to determine, what do I want to do with the life I have remaining? And that has been now put in front of me. So, and I'm glad you're making those same choices. And like I said, I just continue to wish you all the success. I hope that the next chapter in the story is where your daughter decides that she wants to get together and connect with you and Brett again. And that'll be what I'll hold hope for.
Amen. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. My last question for you is, if people want to get in touch with you, purchase your book, find out about your YouTube channel, follow your YouTube channel, what's the best way for them to do that, Destiny?
Best way is to go to my website, destinydawnofficial.com. My email is there. The link to my YouTube channel is there. And right at the very front and the top is where you can order the book. And so that should get everything that you need. And there's newsletters, and you can keep up with what's going on.
And I'll make sure all of that information gets into the episode notes and our the YouTube version of the podcast and the audio version of the podcast. So thank you for that, Destiny. Thank you for your time today. It was a pleasure talking with you, and I hope we can do this again in the future.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me on the show. It was a delight, and I'd love to come back on anytime. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.